Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't
know. I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to another great episode of the Geekalacy Podcast. David here. Justin's with me. We're flying solo, just the two of us. I don't know if you can fly solo with two people, but we're doing it. Randy's busy today doing adult stuff, so not that kind of adult stuff. So slow your roll. Don't ask for pics. But Justin, how are you doing today?
I am fabulous. How are you?
I am doing pretty good. I mean, I was doing better before we got a little bit of sad news. Maybe I'll let you start the show off with a little bit of a downer since you were a fan.
I was. Found out that Powers Booth, the actor, passed away this morning. Apparently it was from natural causes, but he was only 68, which is a little concerning. I feel like while we're not quite 40 yet, 68 doesn't seem that far away, and it makes me really, really sad. He's in some really cool shows like Deadwood. I don't know if you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I know Randy does. And then, of course, he was Curly Bill Brosis in Tombstone, one of our favorite movies. So it's really sad. And we were talking about this before the show, that he and Bill Paxton, who also passed away recently, were in at least four things together. Those being Tombstone, Frailty, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Hatfields and McCoys. That's quite a little legacy to leave behind.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for poor Mr. Paxton that his final film will be that terrible movie, The Circle, with Tom Hanks and Emma Watson.
Oh, yeah, you didn't like it?
No. Did you see it?
No.
Yeah, never. Don't waste your time. Oh. it's like that when the Powers Booth passed away. I never did watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I was always curious if he played the same character in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that he played in Avengers. You know, he's part of that security council that tries to nuke Manhattan. Mm-hmm. But I was trying to, in my 1 second of research, since I don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I could just get his character name, but I did not see if he was, in fact, the same person. So I wish Randy were here, since he's the only person on this planet still watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But, yeah.
Sad.
But it's sad. Super sad.
And it's sad.
Yeah. What isn't sad is the freight train that is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which I guess before we start talking about how amazing it's doing the box office numbers, I am not too proud to admit, not that I'm wrong, but that I may be too harsh at times. And I was a little harsh on Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And when I sat back and listened to the podcast and thought about it, I've been on at least 20 different podcasts complain that my only real gripe with the Marvel Universe is that it's too formulaic and they're too dependent on each other and they kind of create this like TV show motif. And then Marvel gives me a movie that really has nothing to do with plot. Like it's a character driven film. It's not about A to B to C. It's not about the plot. It's about a bunch of cool characters hanging out, having fun. And I shit all over it. So.
Absolutely. God, it made me so mad. And when I was actually re-listening to the show, I was like, what a dick. You can tell that I'm getting a little upset when you're like giving your list, your top 15 list. I'm like total bitter grapes.
Yeah, I could definitely tell you're a little upset. And I still do have significant... So I do have some decent qualms with the film, but I appreciate it a little bit more as kind of like this nice break from the serious, you know, everything has to lead to Thanos and Infinity War. And we got this nice little break that was kind of a cool film. I don't know if it has the rewatchability that some Marvel films have. And, you know, it still may end up, you know, lower on my list than I think most people will have it. But I may have been a little too hard in my critique of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
That's okay. That's your job.
Yeah. But I'm open. I admitted it. You know, I have no problem admitting that I was not wrong, but I was not 100% right.
You were looking at it in a different way.
Yes. I would have liked a little more connective tissue, but, you know, it's a pretty fun movie.
Yeah.
All right.
That's okay.
And yeah. And people agreed because it made $63 million this weekend on its second weekend. And it's up to $246 million domestically. And worldwide, it's already at $630 million. It's the third highest grossing film worldwide of the year, right behind Fate of the Furious and Beauty and the Beast, which may not stay number one for much longer because Fate and the Furious is only $13 million behind it. So.
Ooh, that's close.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know anyone who hasn't seen Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Do you?
What was the question?
I said, I don't know anyone who hasn't seen Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yeah. Yes, I do. I know two people. That Tim Byers of thefullbleed.net and Rod Faulkner of the7thmatrix.com.
So 50% of everything geek has not seen the geekiest movie out right now.
I know, you believe that? Bunch of fucks.
And Rod Faulkner loves shit like this.
I know.
Loves sci-fi.
He just hadn't gotten around to it. What movies... So we still have... 3.5 more months of summer movies. What do you think can beat Fate and the Furious? Do you think Spider-Man can pull it off?
You know, I don't think that the Spider-Man will make $1 billion. As far as the contenders for $1 billion, you know, that's a hard pill to swallow. You know, it's hard to bet against Transformers because those fucking movies, the worse they get, the more money they make. And this, I mean, I hate to say like, oh, Transformers is going to come and kick. But like every time those movies come out, they make $1 billion. And same thing with Pirates of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
Like those movies just bring in money.
Yeah.
And
I think Pirates will probably do pretty well overseas too.
Yeah. I can't quantify it with quality, and I get every time a Transformer movie comes out, I get shit on because I love Transformers, but like the last two have been terrible. But I mean, Transformers Last Night will make $1 billion. I have zero doubt. Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales will probably, if it doesn't make $1 billion, get very close. And I could see either of them. You know, outside chances could go to something like Cars 3 because, you know, Pixar is, you know, Disney knows what they're doing. And
King Arthur?
Yeah, definitely not King Arthur. Did you see King Arthur this weekend?
No.
All right, you were not alone in your absence of King Arthur. It only made $14 million, and that's no bueno.
Yeah, I think Pirates and Transformers have a chance only because of foreign box office. But I hope that Spider-Man knocks it out of the park.
Yeah, I'm super pumped for Spider-Man. And everything we've seen, like I think I said in the last podcast, everything we've seen in the school has me really excited for this cool John Hughes vibe. The action looks a little generic Marvel, but it's not saying a bad thing. Marvel makes good action. But or do you think, okay, we mentioned those, do you think that Fate of the Furious ends up number one, or do you think one of these other movies catches it? Because like you said, like in China loves those two movies.
Yeah.
Pirates and Transformers.
You know what's funny is I didn't even think of Transformers until you said something, and that has the potential to just crush it in the foreign box office, just like the last one did. Once it came out in China, then all of a sudden, boom, it tipped the scales and it was a landslide. So I don't know, man. I think that the power of the robots might do some damage.
Well, it's important to remember the robots in disguise.
Oh yeah, disguised as Chinese people.
Yeah, I mean, Age of Extinction made $1.1 billion. It only made $245 million domestically, and I know that I say only like an idiot, like that's not a big number, but it made
20% of the box office.
Yeah, I mean, it's 78% of its box office foreign, and that's definitely one of the largest, if not the largest, large scale American film, you know, discrepancy. You know, Warcraft had a little bit bigger because it didn't do well at all domestically, but I mean, it's got Mark Wahlberg, it's got robots. I mean, it's got everything that foreign markets just cream for. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then pirates, obviously the power of Johnny Depp, and then just the not having a pirates movie for a couple of years might have been enough to wet people's whistle.
Yeah, I mean, Pirates has a similar thing. Pirates, it made $1.045 billion, and it had 77% of its money was foreign.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a pretty big deal. And, you know, Johnny Depp's star has dipped pretty significantly in U.S. Over the last couple of years. But, you know, people always say, like, movie stars are dead. You know, like, America, that could be true. Like, there are very few people who could make a movie and people say, oh, I have to see it because blank is in it. But when you go foreign, like, you throw a DiCaprio, you throw a Depp, you throw, you know, some of these big, big iconic names, like, people will just go just because they're so enamored with, like, the Hollywood system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Disney.
Yeah, which, true.
Which knows what it's doing. Mm-hmm. It's made a hit or two.
Just a couple.
Yeah, it did not make King Arthur, though. But real quick, before we guys transition, just for comparison, a movie like Force Awakens made $2 billion worldwide, $2.06 billion. It made $936 million domestically, which is kind of an outlier because that's, you know, the all-time champion domestically. So its split was 45-55. It did 45% domestic, 55% foreign, to where traditionally with big blockbusters you'll see somewhere in the neighborhood of like 40-60, 40%, 60%, to where, you know, when you see those big giant gaps where it's like 20-80, that just means that either they weren't going for the American market or it just didn't connect. Like Age of Extinction, I know one person who just loves it, and everyone else it's like, yeah, it was a miss for me, bro.
Right. Now, do you think that episode 8 will outperform episode 7?
I do not.
Why? So episode 1 was the same way, right, with the prequels? That was the highest grossing one of the three?
Yeah, for the longest time, episode 1 was the highest grossing Star Wars film of all time, much to the chagrin of a lot of people.
So now, is that because it was, you know, the first one to come around in almost 20 years kind of thing? Or is it, and it's just, it gets people excited again, and then everyone, there were mixed opinions, so then when the second one came out, people were just not bought into it as much? Is that why?
Yeah, I think Force Awakens is going to suffer from that as well. But yeah, it's definitely that case to where, you know, after episode 6, as, you know, I was an adult, but, you know, as a teen, I never thought I was going to see more Star Wars movies. And when episode 1 came out, I'm like, oh my god, Star Wars is back. And I remember everywhere was Star Wars. You know, every store had something Star Wars. If they were a bookstore, they had Star Wars books. If they were a food store, they had Star Wars food items. And it was, just took the nation by storm. And when Force Awakens came out, we got that not as big, but probably like 75-80%, and then Disney was backing it, so that took it to like 11. But I think, you know, we've kind of cooled. You know, we had the Force Awakens thing, everyone came out of the gate, was like really high on it, and everyone's like, wait a minute, it wasn't that good. And then we had Rogue One, you know, which came out, it was great. You know, it did about half the box office of Force Awakens. I think with episode 8, barring it coming out and just being like critically acclaimed as like the greatest movie of all time, I think we're looking at it at probably like a 1.5 billion range. I think it'll end up being the highest grossing film of 2017. I just didn't click because we're talking summer movies earlier. Mm-hmm. But I think that unless it comes out, everyone's like, you remember the movie Return of the Jedi? Fucking sucks next to this movie. You know, if they do that, everyone will go see it, and it'll crush Avatar. You know, I would love for it to do that, but I think that if episode 8 is great, it could set the tone for in episode 9 to become the highest grossing Star Wars film of all time, to where people are just like, well, shit, how's this gonna end?
Right. Not with Harrison Ford.
Yeah. I think it comes down to really the three mysteries that, you know, who is Snoke, who is Rey's lineage, And I totally forgot the third one that I had in my head like 20 seconds ago. But I just don't want them all to be answered in episode 8. I still want there to be questions in episode 9. And I think it would be a great way to end it. I think it would be great if they did something crazy in episode 8, like they killed Kylo Ren, or Kylo Ren redeems himself in episode 8, like Snoke has Leia, and it's like she's the only thing that's stopping you from being the greatest dark Jedi that ever lived, and he kills Snoke in front of Ben, in front of Kylo Ren. Kylo Ren realizes, motherfucker, he goes full Han Solo beast mode like his dad, and just starts fucking just going after Snoke, and eventually Snoke escapes, and Ben is like left stranded on this planet with like all of the resistance around him. He basically goes without a fight. He's like, fuck it. And he goes back. Luke talks to him, and then they have this like alliance tour. They have to work with this guy in episode 9 because he knows who Snoke is, where Snoke is, and how to get to Snoke or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that would. I really want episode 8 to really throw us for a loop in the storytelling aspect, you know, because we're conditioned that Kylo Ren's the bad guy. The you know, Snoke is the Emperor, the overarching bad guy, but Kylo Ren's the bad guy we're going to follow through this saga. And I think that if they flip that on its head, I think that could be really cool. Mm. Yeah. Well, what do you think that episode 8 will make more than Force Awakens?
No. I don't. I think it's going to be the same as episode 1 was to episode 2. Where episode 1 just crushed it, knocked it out of the park. And episode 2, or in this case, 8, might be a better movie, but it won't make as much.
Right. No, I can see that. Well, what do you think happened with King Arthur? You got Guy Ritchie and Charlie Hunnam and made $14 million.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. I had no idea. I knew it was a King Arthur movie, but just watching the trailer, I had no idea what was happening. It's like, I didn't get it. Sometimes I even thought that part of it took place like now. It's like 2017. I don't understand what's happening. So I'm not surprised. What is the cinema score? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, cinema. That's actually I'm really curious what the cinema score.
I can't imagine it being a terribly impressive letter.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna look it up. But yeah, I agree with you. The marketing was just weird. Like, is this a King Arthur movie or is this just like a weird movie?
Sons of Anarchy movie.
Yeah, I just I was just aghast. And I really wanted it to be good because I was really digging B+ was its cinema score.
Oh, but you want an A, right? Isn't a B not connecting with the audience?
Yeah, the only thing a cinema score really points out is like, was this the movie you expected and did you enjoy it type thing? And a B means that they didn't know what was going on. Yep. Most major blockbusters with large marketing campaigns to where they can outlie a lot of the details of the story always get A's because you go into those movies with notions of, oh, this is the good, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. You know most of their names. Snatched was also open this weekend, which I really wanted to see because I love Goldie Hawn. That got a B cinema score.
Her and Kurt Russell got stars on the Walk of Fame.
Yeah.
I can't believe that they didn't have him already.
Yeah.
That's just seems Russell, weird.
Kurt Russell's been consistently making amazing cinema for like 40 years. He didn't have one.
No. He goes all the way back to being a childhood actor for crying out loud. It's fucking nuts. I was blown away. Before I even said congratulations, I'm like, what do you mean? He hasn't had one for like the last 25 years?
I mean, the list of people who got it before Kurt Russell, I'm sure, is embarrassing.
Yeah, like Lassie or fucking Vince McMahon or Trump.
Yeah, Trump.
Give me a break.
For the television. But yeah, what about just kind of staying in movies that are a little off kilter? What did you think of that Blade Runner trailer?
I'm intrigued. As someone who hates Blade Runner, I'm actually kind of excited to see this movie. And I feel like I'm doing myself a disservice by not going back and watching Blade Runner. I know I'm going to have to. I'm shocked that I haven't done it yet. Just as a more mature adult, I watched it when I was a kid, watched it again when I was in high school, watched it again when I was in college, and I haven't seen it since. So, I mean, it has been upwards of 15 years since I have seen Blade Runner, so I'm definitely due, and it seems like a good idea to just sort of refresh my memory. I never read the book, but I honestly don't feel like I need to.
From Philip K. Dick?
Yeah, and I know how I feel about dicks.
You like to fill them up.
Huh.
Yeah, that's a bit of a stretch. I agree. I think it looks really good. Like the look of it, like Denis Villeneuve, who directed Arrival and Sicario and stuff like that. I think the movie looks great, and sure. I'm really interested to like see the look of it. I just hope the story's there, you know. And you know, you pointed out you've got our Harrison Ford running, the poor guy.
Yeah, he's not good at the runnings,
and he's like the most, one of the most iconic action stars too. And he runs funny in Return of the Jedi, in Air Force One, at the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, he's bad.
just running, just do it.
Maybe it's because he's tall.
I'm tall and I can run.
There's no way you run better than Harrison Ford.
I bet I do. Next time we get together for Comic-Con, we'll go out in like the street and we'll like film me running and like we'll like compare it next to him.
We'll put those inflatable T-Rex costumes on and run down the street.
Oh, now you got me. I'm done. Let's do it. I'll buy us each one.
Okay.
Geek Legacy crew thrown through.
So hot.
It's okay. It's nighttime in San Diego. It's never hot then.
Last year it was like global warming record heat.
It was pretty warm.
And it's a whole nother year of more heat. We're gonna die.
The global has been warmed more.
It's like leaving the oven on for too long. We are cakes and we's gonna burn.
Al Gore was right.
Yes.
He's making
Johnson
a sequel.
Is right. No.
Making a sequel to Inconvenience
Truth? I told you so. Is that a problem?
I done told you.
And
it's more about like the political denying of global warming and stuff like that. And they like rewrote the whole ending once Trump got elected. So I'm sure it's very fair and balanced.
Oh yeah. That's so ridiculous. Probably gonna be like floating polar bears. It's gonna be so sad.
Yeah. Well, speaking of
polar bears?
Fair and balanced, fair and balanced, Wonder Woman comes out. We're less than a month away from a really major superhero movie, and to me, it doesn't feel like it.
Eighteen days. 18 days. 1 hour. 43 minutes.
Dang, you're waiting. You're
IMDb has a clock, a little ticking time bomb, as it were.
Are you seeing enough adverts for? I mean, I guess it's on IMDb. You are, but like, does it seem like? Like, for the amount of importance this film has, that we're being inundated enough?
I'm going to have to say no, only because I don't have cable, right? I have all subscription services like your Redboxes, your Hulus, and your Amazons and HBOs. But if that's the case, they need to find a way to reach me, and I'm not getting that in my other outlets like the radio or... you know, on my iPad when I'm playing through the internet and such. And that's a little worrisome. And, you know, we were talking about Wonder Woman on this month's episode of Everything Geek. And Tim Byers brought up an interesting point that this is sort of, you know, it's under a microscope. It's one of those make or break for female superhero movies. And Wonder Woman is, one, you know, it's an iconic character. Been around forever, and it's one of those characters where if you can't be successful with Wonder Woman, then either the audience just isn't there, or they didn't do it right. Either way, it needs to make its money. It's all about money in the business of show, and it would be a shame for this to come out and fail miserably, and it hurt other franchises' chances of getting their own movie. And that's really scary. And you know, we always talk about toys. You know, we're avid toy collectors. At least we used to be. And this is another thing where people always complain that there aren't enough female action figures. And now you got a movie where the female is the star. She's going to have her action figures, but if they end up being peg warmers and little boys and girls aren't buying them, then that's just another nail in the coffin for making female action hero figures.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's not all about the box office. You have that ancillary income from merchandising, yes, and toy merchandise, and where the real money from the movie is made.
Exactly, where the real money from the movie is made. If they spend all this money to make all these toys and all this merchandising and no one buys it, that's going to be a damn shame.
Yeah, and I think one of the good things, maybe it's almost like a no news is good news type thing. Like, we've heard so many tales from all of these other movies, both DC and Marvel, of just like problems in the scripting phase or problems shooting or something like this. With the exception of changing from Michelle McLaren as the director to Patty Jenkins, that's really the only minor hiccup we ever encourage. And it wasn't even a bad one. Michelle McLaren once said, hey, I wanted to go one way, they wanted to go the other way. No hard feelings. And like, yeah, a week later, Patty Jenkins is on there and everyone's all crazy about it. And like, even The Rock came out and said, like, hey, I want Patty. I met with Patty Jenkins on the set of Wonder Woman. I want her to direct my Jungle Cruise movie. So even The Rock signs off on this lady. So from all accounts, like, you know, we were talking about, you know, with like Batman and stuff like that, how we were just inundated with negative stories for so long about, you know, Affleck leaving directing. Is he going to star? And then Matt Reeves is coming on. Then, oh, he's not coming on. And he does come on. And then all these like weird press releases. And then with The Flash, we lose one director. Then we lose Seth Gordon Graham. And then Lord Miller might do it. But then they go to Han Solo and Aquaman. They have a page one rewrite. Batman v Superman. Obviously, they have all the nightmares. To where this movie seems like, from a production standpoint, either everyone is being uncharacteristically quiet, which never happens. I can't imagine they got all these people to be quiet. Or, you know, it's possible that maybe Wonder Woman is this movie that is just was this great production that, like, the studio and the director got on the same page before they started, and they've worked all their stuff out, and everyone seems happy. You know, Patty Jenkins has been on, she's been out there promoting it. She's been doing all these like press tours and stuff like that. So I hope it hits out of the park.
Me too. I'm scared. I'm gonna go see it. I'm gonna support it, and I'm really excited about it. She definitely kicked some major ass and was a highlight in Batman v Superman. So I think we are in good hands.
Yeah, I think so too. Like I said, my only caveat that I've mentioned before is I'm leery of Gal Gadot can lead a franchise. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's simply because we haven't seen enough of her in that capacity. She's always kind of in like a supporting role. And this will be like her first kind of real major role where she's kind of carrying the film. And she has help with Chris Pine and stuff like that and Robin Wright. But I don't know if she has the charisma of, you know, like a Chris Hemsworth, not Chris Hemsworth, like a Captain America, who for some reason I can't remember his name. Chris Evans, sorry. But like we were talking before this show, like I really want the DCEU to succeed because as much as I dislike the things that Zack Snyder has done, I think my life would be better if I have this kick-ass Marvel universe and a kick-ass DC universe. And even shit, I'd even love it if we were able to get shit together on the X-Men franchise, have that be a cool universe. I don't want any of these movies to fail. And even when I say negative things about, you know, people like Zack Snyder, I want these franchises to work because I love these characters and I want it to work. And Justin, you were talking about that a little bit earlier about like the characters in the DCU, and like maybe you can elaborate on that, like who they have and why it's not working.
Yeah, I don't know, man. So when you have Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, you think to yourself, what else do we need? Right? Marvel, yeah. you got all your Avengers and all these fun movies where they even were able to make Ant-Man exciting, Doctor Strange for a lot of people, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, sort of B-budget sort of characters front and center that are just crushing it and the whole world loves. They found a way to pull it off. It's just crazy to me to think that Warner Brothers can't make these three characters work, that being Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And it, what's even more absurd is that Man of Steel is the, as far as the critics go, is the highest rated film so far out of what the new DCEU has pumped out. And maybe it's just too many cooks in the kitchen, and maybe at one point when it was just the one cook, it was the wrong cook. So I don't know. It seems bizarre to me. I'm getting a lot of fun out of the animated movies that get pumped out. Like, there's usually two or three a year that DC animated movies do. They're a lot of fun. You get to see all these fun characters, but for whatever reason, something behind the scenes, whether it be Warner Brothers or, you know, it's the guys in the suits that can't come together, or it's, you know, the director's vision, but it's just not necessarily working. And hopefully after the Justice League movie comes out, we'll be singing a different tune.
Yeah, it's interesting how you say too many cooks in the kitchen, because we came from this scenario to where they pretty much let Christopher Nolan do whatever he wanted. And, you know, he turned in these iconic films that are beloved. And then it turned into they were going to have Christopher Nolan kind of be that Kevin Feige during the Man of Steel time, to where Christopher Nolan and David Goyer were kind of overseeing Man of Steel that Zack Snyder was directing. And about halfway through the production, it became apparent that Christopher Nolan was not interested in that capacity, that he wanted to direct films, which is completely admirable. No one would fault him for it. And so DC kind of gave the keys to Zack Snyder for a little bit. And I think because of the critical reception of both of Batman v Superman, it forced them to kind of meddle when David Ayer was making Suicide Squad. And I'm convinced there's a good movie in Suicide Squad. We just didn't see it. And I think that they meddled in it, and I think it became apparent to them that they've over-meddled, and I'm hoping that they're course-correcting now and letting Patty Jenkins' vision for Wonder Woman, for better or worse, kind of let audiences let them see it and judge for themselves. And, you know, she's made a lot of, like, your favorite television. She did a lot of Breaking Bad. She's done some Game of Thrones. She a lot of, like, the end, like, wrap-up stuff for Breaking Bad she did, and I think that her character work is great, and I think if anyone can bring this group out, this Amazons that no one really knows about except for Wonder Woman, I think she's probably the girl to do it.
Mm-hmm. And your buddy Chris Pine gets to be Steve Trevor.
He's just the best.
Yeah.
I like him a lot.
They're gonna need their shots having some foreigner show up on their island. They're going to get all sick and die of white man diseases.
And you know what I like about all the footage we've seen so far? There's been like three clips and stuff in the trailer where like she straight out saves Chris Pine. Like he's like the damsel in distress, but they don't play it like he's like any less of a man. They don't play it like he should be embarrassed from like that. Like, they play it like it should be played. Like, she's a god. She should be able to do this, you know? Just accept that she is... Let her do it. And so far, everything we've seen, it's very, very well done. That they could have gone really gimmicky with it. But, I mean, I'm not digging the time. You know, I don't like World War One movies. But, yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. And I can't wait to see it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I like the music.
Yeah,
the George of the Jungle sort of vibe. I'll take it. I am happy to see.
What about your girlfriend Maisie Williams? You like Arya Stark, right?
Oh yeah, I do. I like her when she can see and she's not some blind girl, some blind peasant. We'll be joining the crew, or the cast, rather, of the X-Men spinoff, New Mutants.
Nice.
Yeah. That's, when is that? That's going to be 2018, I think?
2018, yeah.
Yeah, so that's exciting stuff. I could use a little bit more not X-Men in my life.
Yeah. I don't know anything about Wolfsbane.
I don't either.
Other than she's like a werewolf thing.
All right.
That's all I know.
Are they new mutants because they just became mutants, but they're not cool enough to be a part of Professor X's Center for Children Who Can't Read Good, or are they just not, you know, wanting to join the X-Men?
No, they're too young.
Oh,
they're not of age. Professor X in the comics, Professor X starts getting a lot of grief at some point for putting teenagers in death and in direct harm.
Yeah, he's like, "Well, I'm in a chair, so you guys can go ahead and do this."
It starts to be frowned upon.
He pulls the handicap card on people.
It's like, oh, I was going to, but I can't, my legs don't work.
Yeah, I'm convinced one of those buttons on his chair is like a bell to bring him food or something. He's a real asshole.
He doesn't need a bell, he just, like, uses his mind, people don't realize they're doing it, he just takes control of them.
Oh, that's a good point.
Now, you made an excellent Derek Zoolander reference. Did you see Zoolander 2?
I did not.
I watched it this weekend. It is not good.
That's what I heard. Isn't it like a 2 on Rotten Tomatoes or something stupid like that?
Oh my god. So the movie opens. Oh, okay. There's a cold opening where Justin Bieber gets shot and stuff like that. But the actual opening of the film is all of these news clips from the Derek Zoolander School for Kids Who Can't Read So Good. And basically the premise is that Derek built the entire school out of the same materials the model was built out. So he used rubber cement and like popsicle sticks and stuff. So basically 3 days in, it collapsed. It kills Matilda. So he kills his wife, and then he's deemed like an unfit father. So they take his kid away, and Hansel gets scarred. So he won't do anything with Derek Zoolander. It's the whole movie's a mess.
Yikes.
It is very, very, very unfortunate that they decided to make that movie, but sorry to detract there.
No, that's all right. But yeah, I mean, it's more comic book movies, right? Just what we need. And you know, given the recent success that Fox has had with Deadpool and Logan, they might have captured lightning in a bottle. And I wouldn't be surprised if, at least for the next few years, all the movies that come out are either you know, super serious like your Logans, or they're over-the-top violent like your Deadpools.
Yeah, I'm real curious to see how Deadpool 2 comes out. Like, I mean, Deadpool 1 is... that was definitely lightning in a bottle. Like, I mean, everything about Deadpool was spot on, you know, between the leak and, you know, the marketing campaign for that movie is the best marketing campaign I've seen for any movie ever. And I they have to like toe the line of like doing the same thing, but then doing something new at the same time. And it'll be real interesting to see if they're able to pull it off.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it'll it's weird because I don't want to be like, I don't want to advocate for the devil or anything, but if it is too much like the first one, then it might be a swing and a miss. The jokes are very topical, which could lead to being dated down the road. And I'm worried that if when you watch Deadpool 5 or 6 years from now, some of those jokes might not make sense.
Yeah. My fear is they're going to try to do the same thing, but just bigger. Mm-hmm. Like have Cable do the same kind of jokes, same kind of everything, and then just have a bigger budget so they can have more than one X-Men and they can have like a bigger explosion.
Right.
And I think that would be a Follies route to go. Like they have the national attention right now to where when Deadpool 2 comes out, it'll be a big deal. To where they could use this to pivot. I mean, I'm not saying change who you are. Deadpool's a funny character. But maybe take a risk.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have people show up. Take the risk. Even if it bombs, people will still give Deadpool 3 a chance. Like, even if, like, you don't. I mean, you go out there, you try something, and it doesn't land. You're going to get another chance. Deadpool 1 was too successful.
Mm-hmm.
And how? But a franchise that wasn't successful, even though it was pretty good, was the Judge Dredd franchise, which Justin loves so much. Even the Stallone version he loves.
I did see the Stallone one in the theater. And then it was on HBO like every goddamn day. But yeah, I'm a sucker for Judge Dredd. Especially Carl Urban's version of said character. That movie blew me away. And even when I watched The Raid, it's basically Judge Dredd without Dredd, and really cool. And I wanted more of it. And I'm really sad that I wasn't able to get more Carl Urban as Dredd. I think in 2012, we voted that as the most underrated movie of the year. And I believe that to be true to this day. It's incredible. I am excited at the prospect of getting Judge Dredd Mega City 1 as a new series. I just hope it sort of follows the same lines and style of the 2012 version of the movie.
Yeah, no, I was very surprised at how much I love Dredd. And it just kind of came out of nowhere because, you know, it was so critically bemoaned and it made like $4. And I remember you saw it and you're like, oh my God, Dredd is awesome. I'm like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Like Spider-Man is awesome. Like Electro is awesome. And you're like, no, it's like really awesome. He's so full of shit. And then I watched the end. It was great.
Spider-Man. Oh, man. But I think, yeah, this is sort of, is this going to be like him first becoming a judge kind of thing? Is that what it's like?
You know, I don't know. I don't think they've given much details as far as, you know, what story is going to be. I think it's just going to, they've just announced that he's going to be on the small screen. I don't think they've found a network or anything like that. They're just right now they're developing, they developed a show. Actually, I take the back. I think maybe a network did pick him up. So they're going to produce it for syndication. So the same production company that did like Battlestar Galactica and Helix and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it could end up anywhere.
I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So check your local listings.
Yeah, in like 2 years.
if that's still a thing.
Fucking Helix! I forgot all about that show. I wasn't into it. I tried to be, but it wasn't my. Wasn't my cup of tea. And Billy Campbell always sounds like he's got like the Nick Nolte disease where he's like whisper yelling. It's really weird.
That's like the parent move. It's like whisper yelling at your kids and like the grocery like, we get home. What's going on in here? I'm so angry right now.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm the king of the whisper yell.
It's so funny how that works. What's his cheese? Ronald Moore. He was a part of Helix. He produced it.
Yeah, he's big in those. He was big in Battlestar as well. And...
yeah, that's what reminded me. It was Battlestar when you mentioned that. Fucking Battlestar. I was talking to Felix about Battlestar Galactica the other day. He was here, and I forget what we were doing. We were just playing around, and that show just makes me so god darn mad sometimes. Just thinking about it. We were talking about. Just the different Cylons and Saul's wife and how I hated her so much. and then like Anders, the not blitzball player, and just how everyone just became a Cylon and how frustrating that was. And Callie when she got sucked out into the interlock thing, and that was cool, but goddamn, that show frustrated me more than anything else that I was watching at the time.
Right, and how anticlimactic it was when they announced like those like final five Cylons.
Yeah,
like it was this huge deal, like the final five, and like it was like these tomes and stuff. And all of a sudden, like the Chief and Ty, and they're like, "Oh, dude, we were Cylons."
Yeah, and then the one lady, the Indian chick, and
yeah,
I forget who the other. Oh, and Anders, and then the final Cylon was yet to be revealed, and that was Ty's wife. Yeah, I just... ooh. If there was an angry way to turn off your TV, I'm sure I did it.
Yeah, there was some
dumb show.
Missed opportunities there.
I know.
But when it was good, it was so good.
I know, it was like the best show on TV, and then it just would just crush my soul.
And
so
they gave
mad.
Ty a like flesh-covered eye patch, and it became shit.
Yeah, I hated that thing. I just wanted to rip it off his face.
Yeah.
Like, why can't it just be black? What's wrong with that?
Yeah, and they had two ships. They had the Pegasus, and then like,
oh yeah, they
had to like sacrifice the Pegasus to like save everybody. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
God. That shit's good. Mm. Rest of it, Not so much.
No, sir.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ronald D. Moore.
So we were talking about Blade Runner, and you know, we didn't really get too much into the cast, but it's a pretty stacked cast. You know, we got, aside from, you know, you got obviously your Harrison Ford, you got your Ryan Gosling, and we have Jared Leto, which is, this is kind of his first high profile role since Suicide Squad, and during Suicide Squad he was pretty notorious slash, you know, renowned for just being a total dickhead to, like, all of his co-stars. And we were just thinking about how uncalled for it was, and how much, you know, usually when someone's like a method actor and they stay in character, you know, they mostly internalize it. You know, they take the character inside of themselves and they take it somewhere else. You know, they don't mail dead rats and used condoms and like living fish to their co-stars, and none of them appreciated it. And Will Smith, Margot Robbie, Jai Courtney, like, all of them have come out and basically said, like, they will never work on a movie with Jared Leto again because he was such a miserable person to work with.
Yeah, what a creep.
Yeah, and so we've talked over the years about, like, you know, Bruce Willis, you know, most people, you know, Kevin Smith did a whole show on it where he talks about just how not nice Bruce Willis was to him. You know, there's all these stories about Chevy Chase and stuff
like
that.
He did like a stand-up bit, and he did like a Q&A, and the first question was, what was it like working with Bruce Willis? And that was like the entire act. That was pretty funny. I remember that.
Yeah, it was like one of his like evenings with Kevin Smith, and he's like, let's just open up the question. Like, what's it like working with Bruce Willis? It's like, let me tell you guys.
And it starts with like him buying a house in L.A. or something like that.
Yeah, if it's still on Netflix, it was like, I think it was like a second evening with Kevin Smith or something like that, which are all great. They're all fun. He's, you know, his movies may not be what I love anymore, but like he's a funny guy still.
Yeah, absolutely.
He can hold the room. So it got us thinking about, you know, other people who were just, you know, just
dicks.
didn't get along with each other. And so I got kind of a fun list here. It's a 10 co-stars who couldn't stand each other. It's supposed to be a surprise. So I thought I'd just go on into it. And the first one is from Justin's favorite movie of all time, The Notebook.
Oh, nuts.
Starring Rachel McAdams and Ryan Gosling. And I guess at one point, Gosling and McAdams got so mad at each other that Gosling requested her to be removed from the set. And I guess they just stopped talking to each other. And it's funny because their on-screen chemistry is, you know, the modern equivalent of like Romeo and Juliet that everyone just gushes for. But secretly, they hate each other.
So, so then her double was the old lady? That's how they fixed it?
Yeah, sure.
Is that how it goes? Like, these two can't work together, so let's just get some old people. Let's get different actors. And they just happen to be like 50 years older.
Full disclosure, haven't seen The Notebook.
Oh.
How is it?
It's two different timelines. One when they're young and one when they're old. I don't know. I didn't watch. I came in and out and asked a lot of questions. I have the book, though, if that helps.
Oh, do you?
I do. Only because it's a long story, but I do have the book, and it was part of my inspiration. Not necessarily the contents of the book, but the story of writing the book became part of my inspiration to wanting to be a writer.
Oh. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
All right. Number two is Justin's second favorite movie. Sex in the City 2.
The Electric Boogaloo. The
Or just Sex in the City, the show in general. Kim Cattrall and Sarah Jessica Parker were obviously the two biggest stars of that, playing Carrie and Samantha. And I guess after the show ended, or even near the last season of the show, the two just couldn't stand each other. And they wouldn't interact with each other when they weren't on screen. And when you're making TV or film, you have to get a lot of different coverage. So you see a close-up on, you know, say Justin and I were making a movie. There'd be a close-up on me to where Justin is off-screen acting with me so I can still give the right emotion and stuff like that because I'm reacting to his read of it. I guess so they couldn't even do that for each other, and they wouldn't even read each other's other parts. And so not only were they hate each other, they were unprofessional, and because of it, shoots would often go late, and the crew would always blame them. So
wow.
So, yeah. So
that's
be
terrible.
Nice.
Terrible.
Yeah. Number three is Bay Davis and Joan Crawford. You know, there's a whole show on them right now called Feud, to where they just did not like each other. And I'm really interested to see the show. I really like old Hollywood, to where, you know, the real era of divas, and I can't wait to see that acted out. But number four is a little more interesting because it's takes place from the great Mick G's Charlie's Angels. It's Bill Murray and Lucy Liu, and there's kind of been, this has really been over dramatized over the years, but I guess Bill Murray insulted Lucy Liu. I guess he would, when he would do a scene with all three angels, he would talk to Drew Barrymore and Cameron Diaz, and he would say stuff like, "Yeah, I get why you're here." Like he'd point to like Drew Barrymore and like, "You got talent," and he'd point to like Cameron Diaz and like, "You're really good in this movie." And then he would look at Lucy Liu and like point blank say like, "What the hell are you doing here? I don't get it. You can't act."
Oh, sad.
And you know, it's kind of sad that it paints Bill Murray as kind of the dick, but. I guess in this case, he kind of was. There was probably a nicer way to do it. And I guess we know who won the feud because Bernie Mac took over for Bill Murray's part in part two. So kudos, I guess, to Lucy Liu. Stood her ground.
Mm-hmm.
Number five, Claire Danes and Leonardo DiCaprio from Romeo and Juliet. This one broke my heart. I was like, but they're so perfect for each other.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, I think it's just a case of like two young people, you know, when you're that early 20s, you know, guys and girls can be pretty different. I guess Claire Danes was really...
They got to watch videos on how their body's going to change.
That's right. I guess Claire Danes was really trying to be serious and like really make, you know, magic. And I guess DiCaprio in between takes just really wanted to just have fun and, you know, live the lifestyle, you know, pull practical jokes and stuff like that. And I guess Claire Danes did not like that, and so they clashed. And yeah, so it's too bad. I'm sure they get along just fine right now. Now that they're both adults and they're highly successful.
Oh sure.
Another fun rom com was Justin's best bud Nick Nolte and Julia Roberts from a movie called I Love Trouble, where they played reporters. And I guess at one point, like, Julia Roberts, like, I don't want to say it, like, hit Nick Nolte, but, like, there was some form of physical struggle to where she just could not contain her ire for Nick Nolte any longer. And they had to be physically separated from set. And I think that, but they still had to, like, finish the movie. I guess Nick Nolte was, like, a show, like, Julia Roberts saw Nick Nolte as, like, a chauvinist. You know, this is kind of like the height of Nick Nolte in like 94. But it's also the height of Julia Roberts kind of.
Sure,
so.
Sure. She's coming off of like, you know, her Pretty Woman's, and everyone thought she was just a darling.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah, the next one really surprised me because I thought I knew everything about Star Wars, but apparently I don't. I guess that Kenny Baker and Anthony Daniels, our own R2-D2 and C-3PO, at one point had quite the spat going. I guess the feud supposedly started when Baker tried to say hello to Daniels one morning, and Daniels just turned his back to him, saying he was in the middle of a conversation, and he was, I guess, Kenny Baker just like became enraged. And I guess their relationship was very tumultuous for many years. I know they must have made up because there was a lot of video of the two of them kind of chumming it up around like the Force Awakens time, right shortly before Kenny Baker passed away. So,
goodness.
So at least they are able to get their beef under control. Number eight's a fun one because it's Tyrese Gibson and James Franco on the set of Annapolis. And this all comes about because James Franco, the movie's about boxing at the Naval Academy in Annapolis, and James Franco insisted on not pulling his punches. And Tyrese Gibson not liking that. You know, like, we're making a movie, we're not actually boxing. But I guess Franco insisted on just letting him have it. And he got a little pissed.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. And last one on the list, we'll just go down to number 10 because it's from one of Justin and my favorite movies, Any Given Sunday. Jamie Foxx and LL Cool J got in a physical altercation on the set of the 1999 film. And at one point, the actual Miami police were called to intervene in their fisticuffs.
Wow. I did not know that. That's nuts.
Yeah. Happened in the Miami Stadium where the Dolphins play. They were filming a scene. I guess the two, they'd been, arguing back and forth, but everyone thought that everything was cool between the two of them. They were just going to do their thing. And, then it just turned into all-out war.
Holy shit, man. That's nuts. And those two hate each other in the movie.
Yeah.
They are pretty much against each other the whole time.
Is he Willie Beeman?
Yeah. He's like, he's changing your place in the huddle, coach.
Yeah. Man, I love that movie. I should watch it.
So good.
But the silver lining of the story is apparently the two performed together at Hot 97 Summer Jam in 2006. And I guess Jamie Foxx said, when you're grown, you don't really have time for all that beefing. When you're young, it's cool to have your emotions on your chest. But we're grown now.
Wow.
So,
Spider-Man.
So that's just a fun little list of, things happen, and it's hard on movies, we're under such a tight constraints, you're in such close proximity, you got these hot lights on you, and, it's gotta be hard you have to perform, if you're a performer and you can't do what you need to do, you got hundreds of people just sitting around wanting to go home and see their family, but they can't because you can't get a fucking line out. So, I've seen plenty of fights break out on set, so this isn't surprising.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, that's all I got for today. What do you got, Justin? Anything else?
Mm-mm. Other than this last week's episode of the Pixelated Podcast, Steven and I spoke about our favorite RPGs, and we asked the question, what makes a game an RPG? So it's exciting and fun, so feel free to chime in, and I hope you give it a listen. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, and I think you guys all had great points on what makes an RPG, and I think one of the lists had Zelda, one didn't. Whichever one didn't have the Legend of Zelda on there is a fool's list, because it is definitely an RPG.
I agree.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly.
Wholeheartedly, yes. Yes. Excellent. I guess that'll do it for us. Thanks for joining us for another great episode of the Geeksy Podcast. Of course, Justin just mentioned the Pixelated Podcast, so make sure that you're subscribed to that as well, and that you are following them on Twitter at PixelatedPod, and you're showing them your love there. We have a little bit of sad news. The Comic Corner Podcast, it's been hosted by Tyler and Jeff for the last 3.5 years. Will be coming to a close, and their final episode will be either this Friday or next Friday. So, if you've enjoyed their show, make sure that you go and you let them know how much you've enjoyed their show. And, they're not giving up comic books. They're just, they don't have time to talk about it every other week. So, follow them on Twitter. I'm sure they'll still share their opinions on what they love and what they hate about the comic book industry. And tell them that you love them like we do. So, But go to geeklyxy.com for your geek news and reviews, and we'll talk to you guys next week.